Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, economics, current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abomination of desolation when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 7 that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea isn't full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water, about 286,000 cubic miles of it. Now, for century after century, millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and the sea has not increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is this possible? Well, we call it the cycle, or the circle, of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, we understand this. Modern science today has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. And I conduct that school here at the law school twice a year. For more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's free of charge. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. But best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Alright, we're reviewing a report, a scientific report, on the abomination of desolation written by a fellow by the name of R. Wright. Last name is spelled W-R-I-G-H-T. Written about 3 years ago, I received a copy of it. It's been sitting here for a couple of years. And I'm trying to find this fellow, R. Wright, so if you happen to know who he is or where he is, or if you know of the other three installments to this report, I'd be much obliged. Now, last time we were talking about the abomination of desolation, the common views or the common beliefs concerning the interpretation of this prophecy. The first one was Antiochus Epiphanes, 164 B.C., temple destruction, 70 A.D., the Islamic conquest of 638. That's where we ran out of time. The other three that we're coming up on is the cross of Christ, Zionism, and future fulfillment. These are the six common constructions or interpretations of this prophecy called the abomination of desolation. Which one is correct? Or it could be that all six of them are incorrect and that there is a seventh alternative which we're coming up to. The cross of Christ, number four. This is a minority position held by some Jews, principally as the result of some recent writings. These writings do not verify or use the 1290 days mentioned in Scripture in any manner that would indicate the cross of Christ is the abomination of desolation. But other scriptures are cited instead. The numerical conditions in the scripture cannot be related to anything even remotely related to Christianity, but this interpretation is still held by some Jews, probably in reaction to Christianity, which has treated the Jews very poorly. Now, while not a popular or widely held position, it illustrates once again that if we elect to ignore certain scriptures, almost any confusion can be obtained. Zionism, number 5. The new interpretation is being sounded across the internet in the Middle East presently, having just been recently developed in reaction to the current state of Middle East politics. In this perspective, the rise of the Zionist state of Israel is the abomination of desolation. The believers of this perspective claim that while the scriptures, as originally presented by God, were accurate, the Jews have modified them, and hence not all of the Bible can now be considered trustworthy. Additionally, Islam claims that since the Jews rejected Jesus and the Christians deified him, it was necessary for God to bring another prophet, Muhammad, into the world to show the way. With the recent claim that the Zionist movement is the abomination of desolation, we can see once again that if the scriptures are ignored or modified for any reason, any belief at all can be presented. And then finally, future fulfillment. This position has evolved over the past 100 years or so. It has become immensely popular among North American evangelical Christians. This interpretation contends that God stopped the prophetic time clock with the resurrection of Jesus and will start the clock again 7 years before the end of the age or the second coming. Accordingly, a world leader will arise who is against everything taught by Jesus and will take power over much of the world, if not all of the world. The Jews will rebuild their temple and reinstitute animal sacrifice from their temple altar, and 3.5 years, or about 1290 days, after the prophetic time clock starts ticking again, the anti-Christian world leader will declare himself to be God in the newly built Jewish temple. This declaration is thought by these Christians to be the abomination of desolation and will upset the Jews so much that they will no longer support this world leader and will even start becoming Christians themselves. Although there are many variations on this position, the belief system goes on to predict a large number of end-time events, finally culminating in a final battle which will occur in Israel and be halted by the second coming of Christ. This interpretation illustrates the difficulty in working with unfulfilled end-time prophecies. The numbers are accommodated here by the belief that the animal sacrifices will be instituted and stopped. Then, exactly 1290 days later, the anti-Christian world leader will declare himself to be God. They also believe that 45 additional days later, a great blessing will occur, although it is not agreed on as to what that blessing might be. Since they look for all of the abomination of desolation scriptures to be fulfilled yet in the future, there is little one can do today but to wait to see if it happens as they predict that it will. However, if one lists the conditions necessary for this belief system to be correct, then the number of assumptions runs very high, with contradictions to scriptures occurring in several places. This is an important fact to note because the proponents of this view have not rejected scriptures that they do not understand. They have simply ignored them. It is even possible that this interpretation could develop into a new religion that is focused on following the writings of men, and yet still call themselves Christian. The ramifications of these views In our review of the various perspectives of this abomination of desolation, showed that they were developed by those interpreting events during the era in which they lived, and some of those interpretations are now clothed with traditions that have been handed down through the ages, as if that provided some legitimacy to their interpretations. Keeping in mind, of course, that the Scripture says plainly the Scripture is of no private interpretation. Now, those living at the time of Antiochus saw their current events as fulfillment. Those living at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem thought that the destruction of the temple in 70 AD might be that fulfillment. People living at the time of the Islamic invasion of Jerusalem believed the Dome of the Rock fulfilled the Scriptures. Jews persecuted by Christians gave consideration to the Scriptures being fulfilled by the Christian cross. In our present world, people reviewing Middle East politics frequently conclude that the Scriptures are yet to be fulfilled, and some have developed an end-time religion to account for the abomination of desolation Scriptures using a system of fulfillment through a complex series of events that are yet to occur. So we have seen that these belief systems are typically started by those interpreting Scripture according to the events of their own era and perpetuated by those who heard a given view first. Those who first heard that the Scriptures were fulfilled by Antiochus believe it that way, citing the reference in 1 Maccabees written in the era that those events occurred in. Those who first heard the story that it was fulfilled during the destruction of Jerusalem believe it that way, citing first century references for it. And then those who believe it was related to the Islamic invasion of Jerusalem cite the words of Sophronius, who stated so at that time. And then finally, end-time prophecy preachers have a new interpretation that relies on future fulfillment, and that perspective has many followers in North America. And so it seems that not only do people tend to believe what they heard first, but they also use their intelligence to justify continuance of that belief, rather than seeking the correctness of the belief from the Scripture. But that is all about to change on the pages that follow. Here's our objective. One of the reasons for introducing a system that uses a model is to present the evidence in a way that does not challenge people's traditions, while providing a method of examination that relies not on tradition but on evidence. This manner of inquiry was used to examine the abomination of desolation prophecies, and we reviewed each of the positions above carefully with the 1290 days of Daniel Scripture in mind, and only one position merited further review. We didn't flag it as we reviewed it because the above examination was reporting only on current interpretations of the time according to beliefs, not according to evidence. So let's do a re-examination. And a re-examination is necessary that will focus on the evidence rather than belief. Chapter 4, The Abomination of Desolation Revealed. The abomination of desolation is the term that the Bible translators have used to describe an overspreading of abominations. For example, it is an appalling abomination that occurs on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The Hebrew Bible references the abomination of desolation several times in the book of Daniel, and it is referenced twice in the Scriptures of the Christians. Each of the occurrences is cited below for reference. So let's take a look at the references. In Daniel 9, verses 26 and 27, it says, "He will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7 in the middle of the seven, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering, and on a wing of the temple he will set up an abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out upon him." Daniel 11, verse 31. His armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. Then they will set up the abomination that causes desolation. In Daniel 12, verses 11 and 12, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1335 days. Then in Matthew 24, verses 15 and 16, we read, "So when you see standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand, and let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains." And in Mark 13, verse 14, "When you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains." Now, these scriptural references are difficult to understand and use terms whose meanings are definitely unclear. Who is this he of Daniel 9:26? Who are the many? And how long is a seven? Is the end of the sacrifice and offering forever, final, or is it for an unspecified duration of time? How long after the cessation of the sacrifice before the abomination is established? What does it mean to say there is a decreed end to be poured out upon him? And in Daniel 11:31, the references are ambiguous here also. Whose armed forces are they? How is the temple desecrated? How long after the cessation of the sacrifice is the abomination to be set up? The other scripture references are equally nebulous. Now, one senses that this is an important event, but when we recall that Daniel was told in prophecy that other desolations have been decreed for Jerusalem, we should realize that identifying the specific desolation that is biblically designated the abomination of desolation could be extremely difficult. When references are as vague as he or his armed forces or time periods as unknown as a seven, how can you and I determine what these scriptures are referencing? Now, fortunately, there is a scriptural way provided by the prophecy of Daniel 12:11. If we could understand when sacrifices cease and comprehend the time references of 1290 days, that is, relative to our own present-day Common Era calendar, then we could simply calculate the date of the abomination of desolation and when it occurred, or determine that it has not yet occurred. Now, this prophecy was given with numbers in it, and those numbers were given for a reason. They provide the method by which we can positively identify the abomination of desolation and do it scientifically, which would otherwise be obscured without this number reference. It must be understood, however, that the prophecy could not be verifiable or verifiably understood without the numerical references that are included in the prophecy. And those references could not be understood until events on earth occurred that allowed their understanding. That's why Daniel was instructed to hold back until the time of the end, and the wise would understand. But the wicked and the foolish would never understand this prophecy. Now, since God is perfect and the prophecy of the abomination of desolation was given under his authority, it would seem that God did not want this prophecy to be understood before the abomination of desolation had occurred. Daniel asked what the meaning of all this was, and the angel told him, close it up and seal it to the time of the end. This particular prophecy could not be understood prior to its actual occurrence. And yet, as we shall see, understanding this prophecy today places us in a position of understanding of other prophecies that carry numerical references also. So in the research leading to the results that are reported in this report, we were forced to conclude from the Hebrew Bible that the abomination of desolation had already occurred, past tense, and we will proceed to describe the conditions established for that identification. So let's begin with a day for a year. Now, we have adopted the convention that a day in this prophecy is a year. This is a common convention done by many Jews and Christians today, and it is based on the scriptures in Numbers 14, verse 34, and Ezekiel 4, verse 6, which declare a day is a year for those prophecies. Now, while we do not claim, as some do, that a day is always a year in every prophecy in the Bible, we note here that this condition is applicable to all prophecies that we examine in each one of these four reports. Indeed, this is the key condition underlying these reports, and without its compliance, the results of our study are totally invalid. Now, the ramifications are clear. The last date that sacrifices ended was when the Romans destroyed the second temple in Jerusalem and sacked Jerusalem in the year 70 AD, or 70 of the current era. Since the abomination of desolation is an event, its occurrence has either happened prior to our modern day, or it is yet to occur. Since the last sacrifice cessation date is 70 of the common era, the latest possible time that the abomination of desolation could have already occurred is in 1360 CE, that is 70 plus 1290. If the abomination of desolation has not occurred by 1360 CE, then it must occur in our future. And since there has been no sacrifice since 70 CE, we cannot be in the middle of the 1290-year period. If the sacrifice is yet to occur in the future, then it cannot occur for at least 1290 years from today. In order to occur deep into our own future requires the planet Earth to survive for at least another 1290 years without destroying ourselves first. And yet virtually nobody believes that that's going to happen, given the hostility, the weaponry, with which to practice war today. And if it is not possible to happen in the future, then it must have happened in the past. We do have candidates for events in the past, but now we must find out which of those candidates is the correct one. Now, the common understanding of the calendar year works like this. Understanding the abomination of desolation prophecy requires that we must know the time and the timekeeping that was understood by the people of the period so that we can convert times and dates to our common era calendar today. This is a difficult task if we examine every calendar system that existed in antiquity, because there were many calendar systems that were in use across the generations by various ethnic people. However, if we adopt the one calendar system that can be related to Scripture, we can then determine that a year had a common understanding among the people of that time, such that one year was 360 days before seasonal adjustments were made. Now the scriptures state in Genesis that 150 days were spent in the ark in the course of 5 months. This indicates that each month was 30 days long. This fits the known Jewish practice of using a month with a nominal value of 30 days, which was sometimes adjusted on the 30th day of the month. If the new moon was observed, marking the month as defective, for example, 29 days. This calendar is a worthy calendar which relies on physical observation of the new moon, and it cannot be predicted in advance as to how many days there will be in a year, because the number of days in a year vary between 354 and 385, according to periodic adjustments that are made as the result of the new moon observations. Hence, the common understanding of the people is that there are nominally 360 days in a year, subject to adjustment, and it is that value that we use in the abomination of desolation prophecy. This, too, becomes a condition. And the condition is that God uses the calendar, that is, the common understanding of the people. And indeed, if he used anything else, the people would not understand the prophecy and would never receive the understanding and the encouragement and the instruction that God wanted to give to his people concerning the prophecy, in which case there would be no reason to give the prophecy at all. Now, more information on the calendars of antiquity can be found in Appendix D, attached to this report. The cessation of the sacrifice is next. The scripture of Daniel 12, verse 11, states that the abomination of desolation occurs 1,290 days after the cessation of the sacrifice. The scripture does not tell which sacrifice cessation is the one referred to, and that is important since the sacrifice has stopped several times historically. Since Daniel is the recipient of the prophecy, the sacrifice cessation that he will be associating the prophecy with is the cessation that occurred during Daniel's lifetime. However, from a purely grammatical perspective, any sacrifice cessation date could be the one referenced by Scripture, or even a date into the future could be implicated if the sacrifices were reinstituted. So we considered each of the known sacrifice cessation dates, and only the one that occurred during Daniel's lifetime fits the events of history exactly, and no other sacrifice cessation date fits both Scripture and history in any calendar system. So in order to be able to use this prophecy to calculate with, it is necessary to determine when exactly the sacrifice did actually end during Daniel's lifetime. During the siege of Jerusalem, sacrifice was performed when there was a sacrifice available. Even after Jerusalem fell and the temple was destroyed, there were people bringing offerings to the house of the Lord, indicating that the people were traveling to the Temple Mount to do their sacrifices. This is not surprising. The people outside the walls were not able to sacrifice the year before in Jerusalem since the city was under siege. And now with the siege over, the Temple Mount was available. No doubt the Jews entertained ideas of rebuilding their temple and restoring life in Judah, but it was not to be. Unknown to them, there was yet another deportation that was going to occur in just a few years, one that removed the remainder of the people, and without people or qualified priests, it also ended the sacrifice, as the land became totally desolate. Thus, the earliest date for the cessation of sacrifice during Daniel's lifetime is the date that Jerusalem fell, and the latest date is the time of the final deportation in the 23rd year of King Nebuchadnezzar in 581 BC. Since Scripture indicates that sacrifice was still occurring after the fall of Jerusalem, and because sacrifice was a strong tradition that we believe the Jews would continue as long as they were able, we shall use the time of the final deportation for the year that the sacrifice ends. We do not know the month that deportation occurred, but we will use mid-April as the time of the deportation, which would place the sacrificial cessation date on or about April the 15th, 581 B.C. Selection of this time will be one of our conditions that we will be using, so it is important to understand the amount of inaccuracy that would result if our conditional mid-April date is, in fact, incorrect. Historically, Nebuchadnezzar placed Jerusalem under siege for 18 months, and extreme hardship existed inside the walls of Jerusalem. Starvation was so bad that mothers ate their children for food, and those outside the city could not come to Jerusalem for Passover because it was surrounded by Babylonian soldiers. After capturing Zedekiah, Nebuchadnezzar killed Zedekiah's family, put out Zedekiah's eyes, deported Zedekiah to Babylon, where he died in prison. This was due to Zedekiah not keeping his agreement with Nebuchadnezzar, who demonstrated that it was a vengeful and ruthless man. And after the city fell, the Babylonians plundered the temple and the homes of the Jews, taking things of value. Life in Jerusalem was disseminated, and the temple was desecrated and burned. Many survivors were deported to Babylon, leaving only the poorest people to work the land. All right, we're at the halfway point. Stand by, boys and girls. We'll be back with more on the abomination of desolation when we come back. You've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 1-417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. 4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing The Abomination of Desolation, written by R. Wright, whoever Mr. R. Wright is. I thought it was a pretty good article, a pretty good treatise. It's scientifically done. It's a unique approach to the scriptures. Normally, we would code plead them out as a matter of law. But Mr. Wright used the scientific principle and said, okay, let's build a model. Let's see if the model, viewed from the perspective of history, fits the dates and fits the prophecy. And surprisingly, it does. It was copyrighted in 2002, so it's fairly recent. He reports that he wrote this in four sections. It's called The Internet Reports, Report Number 1, The Abomination of Desolation. We are reviewing Chapter 4. Going on, he said, Gedaliah was named the regional governor by King Nebuchadnezzar. This made Judah a province of Babylon, and in the eyes of King Nebuchadnezzar, the Jews became his subjects. Those that remained could live as long as they wished, as long as the king received his tribute. Gedaliah put out this message that the people could return to the land and work the crops and live in peace. The Bible states that people who had fled Judah during the siege did exactly that. They returned from the countries to which they had fled and began harvesting their crops. Then disaster struck as Gedaliah, along with those that were close to him, were murdered by Jewish nationalists who had no regard for what the consequences might be from Nebuchadnezzar. And they also murdered the Babylonian soldiers stationed at Mizpah, as well as 70 people from a caravan on its way to Jerusalem to sacrifice in the house of the Lord. Fearing reprisals, the killers fled, kidnapping residents as they proceeded. But they were stopped by Jews who were loyal to Gedaliah, and the population recovered. Yet the rescuers also feared that Nebuchadnezzar would return when he learned that his authority had been challenged by a rebellion in Judah, and his appointed governor, along with the Babylonian soldiers, brutally murdered. So fearing his reprisal, many of the remaining people fled to Egypt, where the prophet Jeremiah had warned them not to go, because if they did, they would die in and by the sword if they did. But they went anyway. The remnant that stayed in the land were deported after King Nebuchadnezzar sent the captain of his army to Judah and deported them to Babylon. This was not a hostile deportation as before, and no people were killed. Nebuchadnezzar had to respond to the killing of his appointed governor and the Babylonian soldiers and with the rebels. Now, the people remaining in the land were not those that had rebelled against the king. Nebuchadnezzar could have left them in Judah and appointed a new governor, but he chose to deport them instead. So it's our opinion that Nebuchadnezzar made a logical choice. If he had left the people there under a new governor, the rebels might return and try to take them captive, or they might kill the new governor. By taking them to Babylon, he is providing for his own self-serving purposes while also responding to the murder of Gedaliah. Now, while we know from Jeremiah chapter 52 the year that the deportation occurred, but we do not know the month. We also know the month that Gedaliah's murder took place, but we do not know the year. Tradition holds the murder was just 2 or 3 months after the fall of Jerusalem. But if this is correct, it means that those who had fled Judah for fear of their lives must have made some very fast decisions in order to decide to return and do so before the harvest, as Scripture states they did. So many scholars believe that the events recorded in Jeremiah 40 and 41 could not have been accomplished in 2 months, and that Gedaliah was killed in the 7th month of the following year. Even that presents the difficulty of why Nebuchadnezzar waited even more years before responding to the killing of his own officials, which would be unusual behavior for a vengeful man like Nebuchadnezzar. This has led some to believe that Gedaliah was governor for nearly 5 years before he was killed in the seventh month. J. Kame, staff editor of the Encyclopedia Judaica, stated that Gedaliah had been governor for 5 years before being killed. If this is correct, it allowed enough time for the people to get their lives back to normal and for the Jews in surrounding countries to witness that the people of Judah were living securely as before and that it was safe to return back to Judah. This would also mean that Nebuchadnezzar's response of deporting the remaining people was a rapid one. Since the killing was in the seventh month, a response time in April would be very rapid. Nebuchadnezzar must learn of the killing, plan his response, give his captain of the army the orders to deport, and send the army to Judah. We do not know when Gedaliah was killed, but the only possibility that does not leave unanswerable questions is that Gedaliah was governor long enough for frightened people to feel safe again, and presents Nebuchadnezzar true to his character. A mid-April date also would be a good time for the deportation to occur from a weather perspective. The army is capable of deporting in any climate, but a population of older people might not be so capable, and it was Nebuchadnezzar's desire to deport the people, not kill them, as they are now not his enemy, but his subjects. In any case, January 1st is a most unlikely time to have a deportation, and since we're going to calculate using a calendar date, it is beneficial to have a month other than the January 1st default for the calculation. April, from all of the information, appears most logical from a weather standpoint. Not too hot, not too cold, and depending on whether the murder of Gedaliah took place a mid-April time could improve our accuracy considerably. If the deportation actually took place between October and March, an April date could be incorrect by as much as 5 months. If the deportation was June to October, the inaccuracy could be up to 6 months. This is considerably better than using a January 1st date, which would allow for a maximum inaccuracy of 12 months. So our calculation, therefore, is a much better choice with an April date than January 1st. And if J. Kame's belief that 5 years elapsed from the fall of Jerusalem to the murder of Gedaliah, then our mid-April selection will be very accurate. Hence, even if our April month selection is incorrect, we've improved our accuracy over a January 1st date, unless the deportation actually took place in January. As we shall soon see, our calculation does not require extensive accuracy in this particular. In fact, a sacrifice cessation date within 5 years of the actual cessation is sufficient, but we will strive to achieve the best possible accuracy in this report. We have now provided all of the conditions necessary for the determination of the abomination of desolation, and with these in place, we can now calculate the date of the abomination of desolation and fix its date on the common era calendar of today. Since a day in prophecy is to be considered 1 year, the 1290 days becomes 1290 years of 360 days each, which is a total of 464,000 days. Now, by dividing 464,000 days by 365.2425, which is the number of days in a common era calendar year, we obtained the number of years. This length of time would be on the common era calendar. The calculation is 464,000 divided by 365.2425, and it equals 1,271.48 years. Thus, we need to look 1,271.48 years after the sacrifice ceased in Daniel's lifetime to find when the abomination of desolation occurred on the common era calendar of today. April of 581 on the calendar timeline is 580.7 on the Cartesian axis, so we need to look 1,271.48 years beyond that and then adjust for the lack of a 0 year between 1 BC and 1 CE. So the calculation looks like this. 1,271.48 minus 580.7 equals 690.7, which after adjusting for the 1 year difference due to the lack of a 0 year is 691.7 on the common era calendar. There are examples of calendar arithmetic attached to this report in Appendix C for those who may be interested in performing similar calculations. The Abomination of Desolation in Daniel 12. Now, this calculation conditions of its deployment and results are graphically depicted below. Note that the year of the Abomination of Desolation becomes active and corresponds exactly to the year that the Dome of the Rock is completed in Jerusalem. Now, is that an amazing coincidence? In fact, it is not only in Jerusalem, but it is on the very mountain, the Temple of God, which was built in Jerusalem and indeed was placed directly over the site of the Jewish temple. This location is where God said that he would rest his feet forever and is the location of the Holy of Holies. It is considered by Jews to be the holiest spot on planet Earth. And within Islam, it is now considered to be the third most holy site behind Mecca and Medina. So it is truly amazing if it is in fact a coincidence that a religious high place of any sort might be built exactly when and exactly where a prophecy made over 1,000 years before had predicted it. Now we need to examine Islamic history, the history of the Dome of the Rock, the history of Jerusalem, and the other prophecies that include quantitative numbers within the framework of our conditions in our model to determine if this remarkable coincidence has any merit. These examinations are extensive, and the subject of the remaining three internet reports, where through the use of prophecy we shall learn what is underlying the punishment periods of Jerusalem, the time of the Gentiles, the two witnesses, and the all-mysterious time, times, and half a time, the meaning of which lays bare much of the plan of God and leaves us in awe of his wonderful ways. It is a big task ahead of us to examine these things, and while we break it into four reports to make it more manageable, it is recommended that an attitude of prayer be adopted while studying it. The following diagram below depicts the events. Now, the same day is a year, and 360-day year considerations apply for the next portion of Daniel's prophecy concerning the 1,335 days. The prophecy indicates that a blessing will occur 1,335 days, or 1,335 years, after the abomination of desolation. It might be grammatically possible to attempt to relate the 1,335 days to the cessation of the sacrifice as others have done. However, it seems more fitting, more logical, to understand it in relation to the abomination of desolation rather than the cessation of the sacrifice. Supporting this view is the fact that nothing of consequence happened 1,335 years after the sacrifice cessation. And we have concluded that the starting point is the abomination of desolation as a result. Interestingly enough, this places the blessing to be received in the year 2007, 2 years yet future. We do not attempt to predict what is going to occur in that year 2007. We will be content to wait and see what the blessing is that will occur. The calculation is graphically depicted below in the following graph. Now, if the conditions are correct, the abomination of desolation began in 691.7 of the current era. Those who wait for 2007.5 will be blessed. This may indicate a decreed end of the abomination. See Daniel 9, verse 27. Now, since the year 2007 is 11 years away from this writing in 1995, it might be helpful to review the accuracy of this calculation to determine the time frame of its occurrence. In this way, we can be watching for a fulfillment when the year 2007 arrives. The date, AH-72, is etched into the cornerstone of the Dome of the Rock. As is explained in the appendix, AH is the Islamic calendar designation for Hijra calendar, which is 354 days long and has no calendrical adjustments. The first day of the first month on the Islamic calendar in the year AH-72 corresponds to the Common Era calendar date for the 4th of June, 691 of the current era. 1 year later on the AH calendar is the date 23rd May, 692 CE. Therefore, the Dome of the Rock opened between June 4th of 691 and May 22nd of 692. Our calculated date is 691.7, which is mid-September, 691 CE, falling well within the AH-72 window of June 691 to May 692 for an AH-72 date. Now, the 1,335 days calculated value is also constrained by the AH-72 calendar date. Our calculation, again, is constrained by the April month designation, but as can be seen above, the time for the opening of the Dome of the Rock could have been as early as June 4th, 691 CE, or as late as May 22nd, 692 CE. Therefore, the range of dates for the blessing after the 1,335 days can be calculated also. The 1,335 days, or years, are 1,335 times 360, which equals 480,600 days. Now, this is 480,600 divided by 365.2425, which equals 1,315.83 years after the applicable AH-72 date. Therefore, the earliest that we could expect the blessing fulfillment is 1,315 years after the earliest possible date for AH-72. This would place the earliest time of the blessing at April 5th, 2007 of the current era, and the latest date by a similar calculation is March 24th, 2008 of the Common Era. It will be interesting to watch during this time period from April 2007 to March of 2008 to see if we can discern what this blessing might be. The author believes the most reasonable time would be in September 2007, since this is the calculated time, based, however, on an April deportation date in 581 BC. Since important things happen nearly every year, it might be very difficult to know what this fulfillment is, even when it does occur. It is not our intent to predict the future, and we make no attempt to interpret this result other than to say it is called a blessing in the Scripture, and it is included here only because it is rightly integrated and tightly integrated with the 1290 days, which has been fulfilled. So in conclusion, we developed this material following an approach that required us to identify conditions or constraints on which the conclusions rest. By doing that, the following statement is true. Within the boundaries of our model and our set conditions, the abomination of desolation occurred in 691 of the current era, and the blessings mentioned in Daniel 12 will occur between April of 2007 and March of 2008, whatever that blessing might be. It is important to understand the validity of the results is constrained by the validity of the conditions, the key condition being that a day in this prophecy is a year. This is an important realization because it means that while there are many interpretations that could be offered, but not verified, we have developed a method that has placed the burden of proof on the validity of the conditions rather than the various interpretations of the scriptural references. If the conditions are valid here, then they are valid elsewhere in prophetic scripture, which allows us to determine the correct understanding of other prophetic events that meet the same criteria. Now, we will pick up this subject again in subsequent reports, but now we examine the ramifications of the abomination of desolation being the Dome of the Rock. All right, we're about out of time, so the next time we'll take up Chapter 5, Islam, Part 1, The Issues, and we'll take a look at the definitions of the Islamic religion. And then we'll take a look at the Dome of the Rock, and see if this Dome of the Rock actually fits the historical events and the prophetic events that we've been reading about. I might ask you for a little help. Remember that this report was prepared by a fellow by the name of R. Wright. He has a copyright date of 2002, but he mentioned that he wrote this in 1995, which is probably the reason why this thing called the Internet Report, Report 1, is no longer on the Internet. It probably has been taken off. Now, if that's the case, somebody out there somewhere must have seen this, or Mr. R. Wright is out there somewhere. Somebody somewhere must have heard about this, because somebody somewhere sent me this report. Now, if you're the guy that sent it to me, then would you identify yourself and tell me? And if you know of this guy, R. Wright, and if you have a copy or if you know of any more of these reports that are out there, there were four of them that he said that he had created back in 1995, I would be much obliged if you would send those to me or tell me where I might be able to get them. All right, that's R. Wright, whatever his address might be. We'll take this up next time, Islam, Chapter 5. Pretty insightful chapter, this Chapter 5, coming up on what Islam is and what Mohammedan theology is all about. So let me give you a couple of reminders on the way off the air. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember that the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log and schedule and archives. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, economics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.